marching up to freedom land. Bangle it, nobody, turn me around, turn me around, turn me around. Bangle it, nobody, turn me around. Keep on a walking, keep on a talking, marching up to freedom land.
Good morning, heart and soul.
Good morning.
I am Reverend Jack Elliott. I am proud to be your chair of the Leadership Council for Heart and Soul Center of Life. I'm also proud to let you know I'll be back a little bit later, but this is the commercial. This is the ask. At our annual membership meeting in January, the members voted to install 2 levels of membership at Heart and Soul Center of Light. And if you're at home, if you're somewhere else in the world, if you're watching us on Zoom, if you're watching us on YouTube or any other social media thing, this is intentionally done so that you can be a part of the village that we call Heart and Soul Center of Light. We are extending a general level of membership for anyone out there in the world who really cannot be here on an ongoing basis, or maybe they have dual memberships at another center for spiritual living, but we've opened up the door so that we can acknowledge that level of membership. Those folks in the general level of membership will have access to our membership portal on the Heart and Soul website. They will be able to take advantage of so many things that are going to be there as we're about to launch that new website. Simultaneously, we are introducing a level of membership known as sustaining members. Now, many of you may have gone through the Path to Membership experience in the past, and you remember that it is an invitation for you to participate, to consider whether membership is for you. It's really kind of taking that internal look to know. So it's going to be the same way. So on March 2nd, we are inviting folks that are interested in the general level of membership to go and register and Zoom in and be a part of the conversation. And we're inviting folks that are interested in giving of their time, talent, and treasure in a sustainable way to participate as well. And here's the big ask. If you've already gone through it, we're going to ask that you come and go through it again. Because one of the things that the Leadership Council is setting up is that every year we take a discerning look to see, is this still true for me? Does that make sense?
Yes.
What I'm reminded of, when I was in high school, I had an amazing speech communication teacher. His name was Joseph Casey. And you could always tell when he was bringing a new idea to the podium. He'd walk up, he'd kind of smile, wave his little finger. Sometimes he would even do... And you know, even with the Reverend Dr. Andriette, whenever this happens, you best pay attention. It's this opportunity. He walked up and he said one day, change the people in your life and you will change the people in your life. Now, if you want to know what that, I'm going to give you a little tidbit of what that might mean. One of the experiences that people have when they go through that path to membership experience is a bonding experience. They remember who they went through that class with. We have 15 years of history of people going through the path to membership experience. Here's how changing the people in my life has had an effect on others in my life. 15 years ago, I only knew Chaplain Robert Williams by name. I'm putting my family on notice that should the time come when my work is here, is done, I want Chaplain Robert Williams to be holding my hand and be one of the last voices that I hear. I would have never had the gift of knowing such a beloved man had I not come to Heart and Soul Center of Light. So I stand before you today saying I'm humbly here to be the best ally that I know how to be. And I love you, I appreciate you, and I thank God for you. Whenever I hear that song, I remember the inauguration of President Barack Obama. And I heard it sung during the inauguration ceremonies. And I was so naively proud because I thought the change had come. And I was lifted up by my beloved friends and family to say, just watch, not yet. But we're holding the vision. And that song is a big part of what I want to talk to you about today, is holding on to the faith that change is going to come regardless of the evidence otherwise showing up. We all can do that. And whenever I come together to prepare a talk, I always think about what do I want to talk about and who do I want to lift up and where do I want to bring. And one of the things that I remember so succinctly from my first days of visiting the Reverend Dr. Andriette at East Bay Church of Religious Science was this wonderful thing that Ayanna Van Tant mentioned when she spoke. She said, I stand before you, and I'm going to drop my age in as whatever number she might have used. I stand before you 70 years old. And if you are my elder, I humbly ask permission to speak. May I have that permission? So that said, I wanted to look for examples of people who had to be the demonstration of faith in action, even though there was no example of it. And we're going to start right with the chair you're sitting in. Look at the chairs in front of you or get some supports from someone behind you if you're in the front row. And I want you to know the name on the chair that you're sitting on. Because in a moment, I'm going to ask you to lift up that name because that is the sample of someone who had faith that you would be here on this day. Does everybody have a name? If you have that name, I'll do a countdown, but my folks at home, my folks on YouTube, my folks on Zoom, my folks there, I also want you to lift up a name of someone who a friend of mine recently suggested was a soul tie. The theme for the Centers for Spiritual Living annual convention this year is soul to soul to soul. You are connecting with the soul that named the chair that has been made available for you. On the count of three, I want you to say thank you, ba-bum, whoever they might be. One, two, three.
Thank you.
They had a vision for Heart and Soul Center of Light. They had faith that if they provided the chair, someone would come to fill it. That faith is everything. There are also people in our life. If you are on the web, if you're on Zoom, if you're on YouTube, I want you to type in a name of someone whose name is on your heart right now that is the demonstration of being the faith that they never got to see manifest in their life. They have faith in something bigger than themselves. You know, I think of that first day back in February of 1982 when Gary Stroer and I walked into the Terry Cole Whitaker Foundations class, Mastery in Living 101, and the only empty chairs in a room of 400 people was right next to the Reverend Dr. Andrietta Earle. There is no chance that that was not divine action in place. We even imagined in those first years, you can imagine being a part of something new. And, you know, one of the great gifts that Terry taught us and that my friend Gary brought to me, we had been watching Terry Cole Whitaker on television. She was speaking at the Marin Civic Center. So Gary and I went to see her live at the Marin Civic Center. And of course, there was a plea in the announcements to sign up for the Mastery of Living 101 class. And Gary came up to me and said, I want to grow spiritually, but I do not want to grow without you. It was the most compassionate words another human being has ever said to me. So of course I signed up. What I didn't know is that Gary only had about 8 years left to be with us on this planet. You know, when the Reverend Dr. Andrietta and I would sit with Gary and we would talk, there was a great photo, you know, one of those Hallmark big eye photos kind of thing in the early 80s of a little boy with red hair, little white boy with red hair, another little boy with brown hair, and a little black girl with curly hair. And it was us. And we teased about, okay, that was us together choosing what we were going to do when we came back this time. Now, to a fault, each and every one of us said, sing. And God said, no, not this lifetime. No, that's not yours to do. No. We're going to tap Brannis. You have other stuff to say and do. Get ready. So we started to get ready. And there were obstacles that were thrown up along the way. I did all the practitioner training. Was the last, John Waterhouse and I say the same thing. We were the last named practitioner with Terry Cole Whitaker Ministries. I was in the ministerial program, and Terry announced, I'm not doing that anymore. We're not naming ministers. We're not naming practitioners. And I got to look at that pattern that I've talked about it before in my life where I get about 90% of the way there and something happens and I go, well, I tried. But in the most spiritual way, my faith said, oh, hell no. You're going to find a way to do this thing. So I found a way. I found the California Institute of Religious Science in San Francisco and the Reverend Daniel Perotti, who knew Terry Cole Whitaker and been in the classes with us. And he goes, I got you. Just send me the tapes. Just send me the paperwork. We'll do this thing. And in 1985, I was ordained. And I had no idea that I was called into the ministry that I was called into at that time. What I thought I was going to do is take all those loving, wonderful 400 people that we had met at the Cathedral Hill Hotel in San Francisco into a new ministry known as the Fellowship and Light Ministry. So I did the 501c3 thing. I did the thing. I got it started. And I got to experience being around about 200 pissed off people. people that were absolutely angry that Terry had stopped doing what she was doing. And I thought, God, that's not exactly what I asked for. Be patient. Be patient. I had no idea that the world was about to go into a pandemic known as the AIDS pandemic. And that I was going to be the minister that would do the memorials when other churches had shunned their LGBTQ plus children. When families would lie and said, my child had cancer. Don't you dare say it was anything else. I was ready for that. I was ready for that. It wasn't what I thought I was called to do. And I'm reminded, one of the people that I wanted to lift up, and you can Google this because I don't have the slides. I want you to Google William J. I'll come up with the last name in a moment. It'll come. William J. was a black man who escaped slavery. And he moved. He knew that there was something more. And he moved up from Texas, up to Illinois. He got involved with the American Methodist Church. And kind of like, okay, that's kind of it, but that's not really it. Seymour. William J. Seymour. And he kept moving west. Now, this is late 1800s. And so when he got the call to come to California, specifically to the Los Angeles area, he really was acting on, okay, God, you say go there, but I don't know. And God said, go anyway. And so he became so committed to what it is that he believes that when he would walk up into the podium, he would walk up and have an orange crate in his hand. And his face would be behind that orange crate. And he would be in prayer. God, guide me to say what I am called to say today. Guide me to be an instrument of your word, not what I think. Sometimes he didn't get the message. And he would just walk off the stage. Other times the message would come. And people would swarm to hear this man talk about the possibilities. Now, he had an inside thing in his favor. He started the Isuzu Church in Los Angeles in 1906. Like May. What happened in April of 1906? The San Francisco earthquake. There was suddenly a lot of people trying to work their get into heaven plan. So they were going to go follow this man. They heard about him. They went to LA and he started a movement that today is known as the Pentecostal movement. Now, we may not be aligned with necessarily the teaching, but what I want to illustrate is his commitment to the faith of the thing, even though there was no evidence of it being true. He believed that if you had been immersed, baptized with the Holy Spirit at such a profound level, you would what? Speak in tongues. Guess who could never do it? William J. Seymour. But it didn't stop him from teaching what it is that he believed. And folks came to him. Folks got it. It started to happen, and he started this huge movement. Now, again, we're not going to get into the data of doctrine of what we believe opposed to what he believes, but I want to use that example because we see evidence in our world right here, right now, with some folks who, if you say something enough, they will believe it. And so we get this idea. And here's the little test. I'm going to ask you to not think about something. I'm going to ask you not to think about an elephant in a pink tutu. I want you to not think about that elephant in the pink tutu dancing up here on stage. How'd you do? Absolutely. And you better not have thought I was one of those elephants. My pink tutu is at the dry cleaner. But what I want you to know, that's like a prayer. Every word we say is a prayer, and our mind cannot comprehend a negative thought. When we say it, our mind responds, that must be what she wants. You want a pink tutu and an elephant? I'm going to give you Barnum and Bailey. And we're in it. We're in it. And so what we've got to watch is, I love that pin that we had a few years ago in the gift shop at Heart and Soul. Tain't so. Tain't so. Now, we get to understand that every thought that comes into our mind, we can edit. The tain't so. Let that go and replace it with what it is that we want. Think about our teaching symbol. Those here in the room can see the lovely stained glass window that our friends from Central Valley Center for Spiritual Living in Fresno donated to Heart and Soul when their time was done. They wanted it to continue. So just like the names on the chair, they wanted to be a part of it. So they gifted us that teaching symbol. But I want you to look at that teaching symbol not as just the creative process itself or this V-looking logo kind of thing or however you would decide it might be, and I want you to think about it as a portrait of you. Everything you put into your life cannot do anything but manifest. So if you're putting pink elephants and tutus, you're going to be manifesting some pink elephants and tutus. Now, I had an experience once when I walked out into our garden with my stepfather, and we were walking out amongst the corn stalks, and right in the middle of one of the rows of the corn stalks was a tomato plant that the vine had just grown right up the corn stalk. And he said, what do you notice? And so I told him what I noticed, just what I said to y'all. And he goes, we have to sacrifice that tomato plant. We did not plant it there. A bird has found a seed, flew over, and dropped it into our creative process. So if we want our garden to be as pure as we imagined it, we have to do some gardening along the way. We have to be able to go in and pull that tomato plant out. Even though we might want to argue with it, go, but it's a perfectly good tomato. No, it isn't, my stepfather would say. It's choking the life out of that corn stalk. If it gets to populate, it will ruin all the corn. And we'll have no corn, and we'll have no tomatoes. That's the creative process. We put it in. It's us. Now, who are we putting in people in the thing? Okay? If you want to change your life, you got to change the people in your life. And if you change the people in your life, you'll change people in your life. You will be the demonstration of what it is to create and manifest a world that works for all. You're called to be that demonstration. So when you look at your garden, it's not quite ready for harvest yet. You're looking at that garden. What's growing there? Ooh, I got some tomatoes in my corn patch. Ooh, I've got some, I got some weeding I need to do here. Who's that person that I keep asking to feed my garden, but they never do, so I have to follow behind them? Maybe they're not the one. Maybe I need to align myself with like-minded people with shared values so that we can have a co-op, a community garden, where I bring the tomatoes and you bring the corn and the Reverend Dr. Andriette brings the baklava. Everybody can bring something. The other person I want to lift up, Bridget Biddy Mason. Bridget Biddy Mason. Google it. Go talk to Dr. Google. She also was enslaved in the 1800s. But she was a clever woman. She was owned by a man by the name of Robert Smith. And Robert Smith was, you know, moving when the crops would die in Texas. He moved to Oklahoma. He moved to Utah. When he moved to Utah, he became enamored with the folks that created the church in Utah. Mormons, thank you. The Mormon ministry, and became Mormon. Now, he's not letting Bridget Mason off the hook, even though the Mormons did not believe in slavery. We'll just call it another thing. We've never done that before in society, have we? Let's just call it another thing, and then we can say we're not doing that thing anymore. We're doing this other thing, and so therefore it isn't that thing. How dare you think it's that thing? Well, she was paying attention. And as he moved from Oklahoma to Utah, she walked behind the wagon and carried three of her babies. He and his wife, of course, rode in the wagon. And they walked, and they walked, and they got to Utah. Now, I know that you've never had this experience either. Somebody joins something new, and they know that that new entity, that new thing, has just been waiting for them to show up. Because they're going to put their impress on it. They're going to do their thing. Oh, it's going to be wonderful. Well, that didn't happen for Mr. Smith. He wasn't all that welcomed in the Mormon church in Utah. So he decided and announced to his family that he was going to go to California. Now, Bridget, being the smart woman that she was, if I walk to California, I'll be free. Okay, I'm going to take what I learned from this Mormon experience about always having 10%, always having some provisions to provide, and she got to Los Angeles with him. And they did the most spiritual, bye. Gotta go. And he said, no, you got me. Went to court. The courts in California said, what part of our law do you not understand? She is free. She put such a plan together that she was the first African-American woman in the city of Los Angeles to buy property. She bought a house for each one of her children. She bought a house for anybody who came, no matter what color they might have been, but had been marginalized, separated, or discounted out in the world. And she built a community. When she made her transition, it's estimated that in today's dollars, her wealth would have been between $3 and $4 million. Now, I want to know more about this woman. Because as she walked from Texas to Oklahoma, Oklahoma to Utah, Utah to California. Do you think she ever doubted her faith? She just had the faith to take one step in front of the other and had the belief that God will provide. She got to this place where she knew she held the vision of higher ground. She knew of the possibility. So I want you to feel Bridget surrounding you right now, because you are a part of what she envisioned. That people could come together in an inclusive way to be who they are. And as many would say, whose they are. You know, so we are in this window of time, and I'll leave with this kind of this idea. Okay, we think we've done the work. Y'all, we're just moving into our doctoral level of study. And we got to have the faith, because now it's all about legacy. It's all about handing off some of the things that we thought we would get to experience in our lifetime. When we thought that change had come naively. But we've got to focus on the change that has come. Because if we focus on the elephants in the pink tutus, what happened yet? Or what's being set back yet? We got to let that go and say, that ain't so. That no matter how much it's showing up, as Dr. Maya Angelou would say, never allow the facts to get in the way of the truth. You stand on higher ground. You are called to be the one, the ally, the advocate, the co-conspirator to manifest a world for all. It's possible. We know it's possible because we are standing on higher ground. And so it is.